Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the home of Blondie cartoonist Dean Young in Tampa Bay, Florida. I remember the day I met Tony Isabella back in the mid-1970s. I was in the back of my friend Bob Pinaha's brown Ford Pinto, the car in which I later learned to drive, and we drove to Newark International Airport to pick up Tony for an appearance at a comic book convention we had organized. I was a starstruck teen fanboy. Isabella was a writer and editor for Marvel Comics. How cool was that? Now, I wish I could remember something that Tony and Bob discussed in the car that day, but, well, after hello, the rest is just kind of a blur. It has been a little while. Now, we've crossed paths a few times since then, most recently when Tony wrote a more than kind review of my Will Eisner biography for the Comic Buyer's Guide, and now it's my opportunity to return the favor. Tony just published a new book, 1,000 Comic Books You Must Read, and it's a four-color, four-star, polished gem. I've had such a good time reliving so many fun comics of my acne-blemished past while paging through this coffee table book. So if you love comics, you've got to get this guide. And Tony, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
How you been?
I've been terrific. It's been very exciting looking at the book, listening to people tell me about the book, and just enjoying that it came out as well as it did.
It's amazing, isn't it, to go from waiting for it to come out to actually holding it in your hands and being able to say, see, look.
Yeah, it was published in China, as many books are these days, and I just kept thinking, oh, my God, I hope it gets here okay. And when I first opened up the package of books, my author's copies, I was incredibly excited.
It really is. I mean, it's just a beautiful book. It's, you know, you think, okay, well, they're going to go a little cheap on it. They'll be black and white. But, I mean, everything in there is in color, and it's the reproduction is fantastic.
The book owes an awful lot to designer Sean Williams and the other people who worked on the design of the book and getting the pages down there. They just did a wonderful job. It was clearly a labor of love for everyone who worked on it.
So where did the idea come from?
Well, I've been trying to come up with some way of doing the ultimate Tony's Tips column, the columns I write for every issue of the Comics Buyer's Guide. At the same time, I was trying to devise something like that. Krause Publications came to me and said, would you like to write a book called 1,000 Comic Books You Must Read? And my first response was, just 1,000? And as I knew from the very start, the hardest part of doing this book was narrowing it down to just 1,000 comic books. But so it was. I was looking for something like this to do. They came up with the basic idea, and then I shaped the book basically from the title.
And how does one go into the attic and pare down thousands and thousands? I don't know how many comic books you have. I suspect it's a lot. How do you pare it down? Do you make list after list? Do you just go with your gut? How did you get to 1,000?
I contacted over 100 friends in the industry and in comics fandom seeking their suggestions. I went through every Tony's Tips column I ever wrote. I went through every page of the price guide and came up with long, long lists, and then started whittling them down as best I could. I ended up writing over 1,100 entries for this book, but there were books that couldn't be fit into this book. There were covers that we couldn't get a good scan of. There were a few other problems along the way with individual comics. So it was paring it down constantly. And then it was slapping my forehead a lot when I realized I had left out some really great comics as well. My aim was to show the variety that has existed in the American comic book from the very start. I tell people this is a compact history of the American comic book wrapped around a, mini entries on 1,000 great comic books, actually more than 1,000 great comic books. I didn't try to give you the 1,000 best or the 1,000 most important. I tried to give you 1,000 really cool comic books.
And there's no doubt. That was one of the things that struck me. Like just on the cover, I mean, there were comics that I was very pleased to see, things that I always liked, like Hardware. There were some Milestone comics. There were some Kitty comics. I mean, it's a real broad variety. Did you ever think, maybe I shouldn't go with romance comics or, something else?
Oh, no. From the very beginning, I wanted to show how many different kinds of comic books there have been. It was my aim to include every genre that's ever appeared in the comics industry. There's even a couple of what they call custom comics in their comic books that were created to provide information to readers who were looking at some problem. There's a comic book in there on colitis, for example.
I saw that.
created to help youngsters learn about the disease and how to deal with it. I always wanted that vast spectrum of what's been done in the American comic book. Superheroes have obviously been a big part of it, but they've never been all that's out there.
Now, how did you balance the approach that you must read these 1,000 comics with, can the average reader actually get their hands on some of these, like the Colitis comic, for example?
In the very near future, we will be launching a website called 1,000 Comic Books You Must Read, and one of the features of that website, besides a message board where people will be able to tell me what an idiot I was for leaving out their favorite comic book, will be information on how to find most of these comics. Quite a few of the older ones have been reprinted online legally. A lot have been reprinted in trade paperback and hardcover collections. Whenever possible, we're going to try to direct people to where they can find these comic books.
Hmm. So the Colitis book, can I find that somewhere?
I'll let you know once once I call up the people who did it and find out if they still have copies left. To try to include all that information in the book, we would have had a book three times as long and three times as expensive as what we did.
Yeah, I mean, this seems like a natural to have an accompanying website. It's one of those opportunities that people who think in multimedia terms would think, yes, well, obviously you can't get it all in there. What a great opportunity to have a book so the book and the website can feed each other.
Right. Well, the website is a joint project of myself and Justin Chung, who is my webmaster at World Famous Comics, where my Tony's Online Tips appears five times a week. So Justin and I are creating this website ourselves.
You'll have your hands full with that. But how do you – now, I remember being a teenager who would just consume – now, I read a lot of books, too, but I would consume any comics that I laid my hand on. I would read – particularly if Marvel published them, I would read Night Nurse, or I would read, a romance comic. But, I mean, today, those things are less common. How do you convince someone who swears that they're a big comics fan that they should read this? There's value in some of these – more offbeat types of titles?
Well, there are times when I think my readers, especially the CBG readers, would be thrilled if I wrote about nothing but Marvel and DC superheroes. But part of my mission statement is to drag them kicking and screaming into the vast wonderment that is comic books. So I give them a little bit of the superhero reviews, but I tell them about other stuff too, and I'm pleased to say that I've heard from librarians who use my columns as a guide to what they should get for their libraries. I've heard from readers who have told me, I never thought I would read such and such a comic, but your review convinced me, and I went out, I bought it, and I loved it. So that's part of the mission statement, to try to introduce my readers to new things.
Well, and you're not you're not always endorsing comics. I was looking at your website today, which I'll remind folks is www.worldfamouscomics.com/Tony, T-O-N-Y, and I think a new issue of Action Comics you gave 1 out of 5 stars. So it's not like you love everything.
No, and some people say, why do you bother doing negative reviews? But I like to think my readers follow me, that they read a lot of my columns, and I have to give them a baseline. I can't just tell them what I like. I have to tell them what I don't like, and that way they have a good, you know, they can see what my views are, and they can read a review and decide whether it's something for them or something they should pass on. I'm just another guy with an opinion, but I try to write these reviews in such a way that my readers can make their own decisions on whether this comic is something they would like or not.
Are there any comics that you put in the book that you already have second thoughts about that you wish you hadn't?
Yes. There's only one negative review in that book, and it's Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars. While I absolutely stand by what I wrote about it, it was a terrible, terrible comic book. It didn't have any place in this book because I was writing about comic books that I liked, that I thought other people would like, and that's not one of them. I had actually at one part asked the designers to take it out, but this was such a massive project and we were fighting the deadline all the way that wasn't possible to remove that title. But that's really the only one.
Wow, that's, you know, we should have this conversation in a year and see if you've had any second thoughts after some time has passed. I know it's
now, I can tell
right
you all
now.
Sorts of things I left out that I wish I had put in there. I somehow overlooked James Robinson's Starman, one of the best superhero comics ever. I left out my childhood favorite, Cosmo the Merry Martian, which was published by Archie Comics in 1957-58. And there were other things I left out, too. So among the people writing into my new message board telling me what an idiot I was for leaving out their favorite comics, I'll be doing the same thing because there are comics that I should have had in there, and if the book sells well enough, they'll be in the sequel.
Mm. It's funny you mentioned Starman. Now, which modern version of Starman was that?
That was the version where he was the one of two sons of the Ted Knight Starman. His older brother took on the mantle, died in the first issue, and then it was up to Jack Knight to take on the mantle. It ran about, I believe, 80 issues.
Hmm. The reason I ask is that our mutual acquaintance, Mr. Pinaha, was the letterer for one of those runs of Starman.
That was, I think,
Starman.
The Roger Stern Starman.
Okay, maybe so, yeah. I was just trying to get a handle on that. I mentioned the Milestone titles, which you were very kind to, which I think very few people actually ever saw, but were very good comics, I always thought.
Oh, Icon and Static are two of the best superhero comics of their era. Dwayne McDuffie and the other writers on those books are, again, among our best writers, and it always bothered me that those comics were, those comics are still under the control of DC Comics. DC Comics sat on them for a very long time. They're starting to bring the characters into the DC universe, but as a reader, I just as soon see them in their own universe apart from DC Comics. I think they're strong enough characters to stand on their own. As proved by the award-winning Static Shock cartoon show, which was, just a wonderful show that got almost no support from the parent company. There weren't any Static Shock toys. These days, somebody does an animated feature, you see dozens of stupid toys. Static Shock, which had all these great characters, never a toy.
Yeah, if only they had brought back Black. If only they had brought Black Lightning into the Milestone universe, I think it would have gone better.
Black Lightning was supposed to appear on an episode of Static Shock.
Really?
DC Comics refused to allow that.
Oh. I just for people who do not know, Tony created a character for DC called Black Lightning, and we ran the image of it with this interview just to bring it back.
Well, just let me state that saying that I created Black Lightning for DC Comics is erroneous. I created Black Lightning in a partnership deal with DC Comics. Now, this is not the venue to describe how I feel about whether they've honored that agreement or not.
I think you've already made it
Black
clear.
Black Lightning was not a work-for-hire creation. It was part of a partnership deal between myself and DC Comics.
Uh-huh. So can you do anything with it today or no?
No. At this point, I cannot.
No. So much for that partnership. Well, what about... I know what else slipped in there that I liked. Malibu Comics, like Prime.
Yeah. Prime was Prime was kind of a modern version of Captain Marvel, but a really, you know, really nice comic with solid artwork, solid writing. Had I more comics than 1,000, I probably would have included some of the other Malibu titles as well. It was a short-lived universe, but there was a lot of good stuff in it. Not surprising considering that they had writers like James Robinson and Steve Gerber and Mike Barr and Steve Englehart.
Right. Well, it was definitely it was a fun read. You know, it took you back to comics from the 60s and 70s that were just kind of they were fresh. You didn't have to necessarily follow from month to month. You could pick it up and go, hey, that was a fun 15 minutes. What else you got? You know. Now, you also, in the book, show a real predilection for Will Eisner's work. I think, I want to say there were 7 or 8 Spirit sections, and Contract with God was in there.
Go ahead.
No, please, John. What were you
going to say? I would say Will Eisner is one of the true masters of the comic art form. And it was very tough narrowing it down to just that relative handful of Will Eisner books. I had the same problem with Carl Barks. I had the same problem with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. I had the same problem with the EC comics. I probably had 3 or 4 times as many Eisner, EC, Kirby comics on my original list, and I just had to take some of them out to make room for other things, to get the variety there.
Mm. Now, the book, unfortunately, is like literally just out of my reach here from my desk. I don't know why I set it down where I did. So I have to ask you this question. I can't remember. Did you have any of the Marvel or the Warren black and whites represented?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The first issue of Creepy is in there. Some of the early issues of Eerie, Creepy, and Blazing Combat are in there. Some of the stories Don McGregor wrote for Creepy and Eerie. So, yeah, they are represented in there.
Mm.
And ditto the Marvel magazines. I'm pretty sure there's probably Dracula Lives, Unknown Worlds of Science Fiction, and probably a few others.
Those were some great titles. I always loved, you know, getting to the newsstand and seeing that there was a new Marvel black and white out, because it just made me feel I was reading something a little bit more mature and not quite as, you know, kiddy.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I noticed in the book is that the comics that you picked for the last 10 years or the last 9 years, you know, since 2000, they bear very little resemblance to those of earlier eras. And I was kind of curious, you know, if you agreed, why you might think that's the case.
Just because as the comics reading audience in this country has gotten older, as publishers and the general public have become more accepting of the comics art form, there's just been more opportunity to try different things. And many of these different things have been brilliant. There's still a lot of great superhero comics out there, but I figured we had already had plenty of superhero comics in the book. I wanted to showcase the variety available right now.
Hmm. I know physically when I drop by a comic book store, which isn't as often as it used to be, but I find that it seems to me like the newer comics, the covers are very dark, almost painfully dark. They don't have that bright, that vibrancy that they had 15, 20, 30 years ago. I find that kind of a turnoff to thinking about, you know, investing $3, $5, $7 on a pamphlet.
I think in a lot of cases, the way to go, especially with superhero comics, is with the trade paperbacks. By that time, you can probably find some word of mouth on whether or not something's any good. You get a more satisfying chunk of the story. I don't know what to tell you about the darkness, because it's something DC and Marvel in particular and many other companies think is a big selling point. There are comics that are out there that aren't dark in that manner. There's my friend Tom Zoller's brilliant Love and Capes, which is kind of a superhero situation comedy.
You got one of those in the book, I think.
Yes, I do. And if there's a sequel, I'll have another one. it's a great book. It's probably my favorite superhero comic these days. Doesn't sell anywhere near as well as a book that good should sell, but it's great. It's terrific.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just clearing my throat. I'm a writer who works out of his home. I very rarely get to talk to human beings. It's usually just my cat.
That's why I do the radio show. It's the only opportunity I have to talk to people. Do you think that comics are better today than they were a decade or two ago?
I don't want to compare by decades that way, but I will tell you that I think right now is the true golden age of comics. There is a vast array of brilliant new material. There are countless reprints of classic old material. There's great stuff coming from virtually every company, you know, every country on Earth, Japan, South Korea, France, Britain, and it's coming here. It's being translated into English. There's never been so much good stuff out there for comic fans and comics readers.
I take it we'll put you on the side of they're better today.
Well, individual titles, maybe not always, but certainly in terms of the vast universe of comic books available to readers, yeah, I would say it's never been better for a comics reader.
And how is it now? My sense is that you're outside of the actual industry itself now. You're working for the comics, the Buyer's Guide. How is it, do you think, today for someone making a living in comics as a writer or an artist? Is it a better atmosphere than it was, you know, when you were doing that?
You know, there's so many different factors that would go into answering that. If you have an editor that's micromanaging your stories and your work, you know, that makes it very difficult. If you own your own property and you have freedom to do what you want to do with it, that can be, you know, very liberating. Could also affect your sales in terms of you don't have the big companies backing your play. It really depends on you know, who you're working with, how free you are to do what you really feel, you know, is right for whatever you're working on. You know, there are people getting rich in this field. There are people who are overpaid. There are people who are underpaid. Some companies have way too many executives and not enough really talented editors and freelancers. Again, it depends what situation you're in. Recently, in the past few years, I've done some writing for my friend Tom Baddock on his Funky Winkerbean and Crankshaft newspaper strips, and that's been a wonderful relationship. Tom is just about the most supportive client boss that I've ever had. He's worked with me to help me master, you know, the comic strip format. And I think I've done some really good work for him and with him. So that's been a wonderful situation, and I keep hoping for him to take more vacation so I can do more writing on the strip. But yeah, I mean, that's been a really good relationship. The relationship I've had with Maggie Thompson and Brent Frankenhoff at Comics Buyer's Guide has been wonderful. They're the first people dedicated. The first dedication in the book is to them, because they literally dragged me through the process of creating this book. It was an enormous project, bigger than any of us realized. We all made every mistake you could possibly make, and they kept me going.
Mm-hmm. And before we run out of time, I need to ask you, print publications of all kinds are rapidly dying. I mean, we're seeing newspapers and magazines fold. I saw today that Condé Nast was down, I think, 8,500 ad pages year to date from last year. What does the future hold for our beloved 32-page comic books? Is it extinction? Is it evolution?
I think in many ways, especially when you're talking about Marvel and DC, that 32-page comic book is research and development for other media, for movies, for TV shows, for toys. So I think the bigger companies will be able to keep that package going. I don't know that it's a satisfying package for a reader, but I think it'll be around for a while at least. I really hope we don't lose the print media when it comes to comic books, because I really enjoy just holding a book or a comic book in my hand. If I have to switch to trade paperbacks over the pamphlets, I can deal with that, but I really like holding my reading material in my hand.
What do you think is going to happen?
If I knew that, I could probably hire myself out as a combination consultant and mystic. I'm too far away from the business end of the industry to answer that question in a way I would feel comfortable. I'm hoping that there's a way for print to coexist with the other media.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, folks, listen, you can find Tony Isabella's wonderful new guide to the history of comics, 1,000 comic books you must read, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it online at mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. You can also check out his latest comic book reviews at worldfamouscomics.com/Tony, T-O-N-Y. That's worldfamouscomicssolid.com/Tony. And, Tony, it was a lot of fun to read the book. It was a nice treat to have you on the show, and thanks so much for joining us in Mr. Media today.
Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Take care of yourself. And folks, for interviews with your favorite comic book creators, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Joe Sinnott, Gene Colan, Dave Gibbons, Danny Fingeroth, Dennis Kitchen, Trina Robbins, Tom Snegoski, Drew Friedman, Chuck Dixon, Danny O'Neill, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, blogcritics.org, TrueSlant, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Vox, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, Current, or Odeo. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, please email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Andelman or facebook.com/Andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day to come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.